The Sri Ramana Gita of Baby Narasimha Swami, Part 2, continued from the July-August issue. While Baby Narasimha Swami was residing at the ashram, around the year 1930, he appears to have taken up the project of recasting Sri Ramana Gita in its original conversational form. For a full introduction to this text, also Chapter 1, see the July-August 2009 Maharishi newsletter. In the present issue, we take up chapters 2 and 3 from BVN's manuscript. Chapter 2, the Swami's verse. On a certain day during the winter of 1915, Sri Ramana was sitting in Skandashramam. Before him sat Jagadisha Sastri, a young man well-versed in Sanskrit, who had previously and has since composed Sanskrit verses. On that day, Jagadisha Sastri wrote on a piece of paper, as part of the first line of his stanza, the words Hridaya Kuhara Madhye, and his mind, in spite of effort, or perhaps on account of it, could not proceed further, and he did not complete it. Then Maharishi asked, "What is it you are writing?" Sastri handed over his paper. Maharishi said, "Go on, complete the verse." Sastri replied, "I am trying, but my mind refuses to work." Maharishi then took up the verse and then and there completed the verse as given below. The verse was taken later to Kavi Kanta Ganapati Sastri at Mandasa, who later incorporated it into his Ramana Gita as Chapter 2. In fact, this, strictly speaking, is the Ramana Gita as it was sung, or was a song composed by Sri Ramana. The stanza runs thus: Hridaya Kuhara Madhye Kevalam Brahma Matram Hyaha Maham Iti Sakshad Atma Rupena Bati Hridi Visa Manasa Swam Chinvata Majhata Va. It means, within the cavity of the heart, pure Brahman as I shines with immediacy as the self, that is, as the soul or inner core of your personality. Therefore, either by seeking the self or diving in it, or by means of pranayama, breath control, let thy mind enter the heart. Take thy firm stand as Atman, that is, be firm in self-realization. Kavi Kanta Ganapati Sastri, on a later occasion, requested the Maharishi to explain fully the meaning of the term heart and the facts stated about it for the purpose of self-realization. Maharishi's reply is embodied in Chapter 5. Chapter 3, the chief aim of life. 7/7/1917. The year 1917 was full of philosophical interest to the disciples at the ashram. Kavi Kanta had now come back to Tiruvannamalai after his trips and was anxious to use this opportunity to place before the Maharishi doubts and difficulties often experienced by the disciples in their effort to understand the scriptures and to elicit the exact drift of his teachings. He invited leading disciples to come forward and place all the difficulties before the Maharishi, so that he might gather all the replies into one volume of Sanskrit verse and name it Sri Ramana Gita. As each set of these questions was put and replies elicited, Kavyakanta took them down first in sutra form, that is, as aphorisms, and almost immediately rendered them into Sanskrit verse. The Sri Ramana Gita was thus ready before the end of 1917, and it was translated into Telugu and Tamil by Vellur S. Narasimhaya, now known, that is, since his adoption of sannyasa in 1927 as Pranavananda. These translations were printed and published only in 1923. On the 7th of July of that year, the questions were begun by one Gajanana, footnote 1, described as Devaratha in Sri Ramana Gita, a young man full of fervid devotion. He hailed from North Canara district of the Bombay Presidency and was well versed in Sanskrit. Srimad Bhagavatam and Maharatha and Canary songs relating to Sri Krishna and Sri Rama were the delight of his heart. He was here at Arunachala for a few months and attached himself to Kavyakanta and the Maharishi and composed a Vibhakti Jashtaka of 8 stanzas in praise of the latter. He lived on begged food, leading an austere life of a bhikshu. When Maharishi and the disciples started on their Giri Pradakshinam, circumambulating the Arunachala hill on foot, Gajanana would be a very prominent figure, as he would sing devotional songs and dance frequently in ecstasy. He used his opportunities of being near the Maharishi to remove his own doubts as to the Jnana Vichara Marga, that is, the path of self-inquiry leading to self-realization. His first question to Sri Ramana Maharishi, reminiscent of the central question in Srimad Bhagavatam by King Parikshit to Sri Sukha Maharishi, was, in this samsara or world of births and deaths undergone by the jiva, the soul, what is the chief thing a man has to do, Maharishi? Well, your question is what you as a man should do in regard to your karma, action, and it asks about the most important duty. You wish to arrange duties in the order of their importance, and this importance is based on the value to you of the fruits of each karma. So, in short, you are inquiring into your appropriate karma and the value of its fruits. Now, does not the karma and its importance depend plainly on the individual who is to perform the karma and reap the fruit? If so, then, as a preliminary to this investigation, first inquire who is the person who does the karma and tastes the fruit. In other words, start the inquiry, who am I, for yourself. That is, the inquiry into yourself, which almost immediately becomes the inquiry into the self, with a view to attain self-knowledge or self-realization. This is therefore man's chief duty. Gajanana again revered, sir, what briefly or the means to attain this self-realization. And as for the means already suggested, namely the inward inquiry or the grand pratyek drishti, how are we to attain that? Maharishi, well, briefly put, the means to attain self-realization are these. First, the mind should be withdrawn from its objects. The objective vision of the world must cease. Secondly, the mind's internal operations also must be put an end to. Thirdly, the mind must thereby be rendered characterless, nirupadika, and must continue characterless firmly. And lastly, it must rest in pure vichara, contemplation, or realization of its nature, that is, itself. This is the means for pratyek drishti or darsana, also termed antarmukham, the inward vision or inquiry. Gajanana, how long has one to go on with this niyama, disciplinary regulation, such as regulation in quantity and quality of food, sleep, exertion, etc.? Is he to adhere to them till he attains yoga siddhi, that is, till he achieves success in his yoga? And do they prove useful right up to the end of the course? Maharishi, yes, the spiritual aspirant in his onward career of yoga is helped by such disciplinary regulations. Once he attains success and reaches his goal, the regulations drop off by themselves. Gajanana, adverting to the answer to his first question, asked again, "Revered sir, as for the goal that is attained by firm, characterless vichara mentioned just now, cannot the same goal be attained by mantra japa, repetition of mantras, sacred syllables?" Maharishi, yes, if the mantra japa is unbroken and performed with an undeflected current of attention and with due faith, equal success is achieved. Even the mere pranava japa would suffice. Footnote 2. Pranava is the short monosyllable om and almost invariably forms part of every mantra. You see that by such a japa of either the pranava or other mantras, the mind is deflected from its operations regarding the objective world. And then, by identifying oneself with the mantra, one attains the nature of Atman. Continued in the November-December issue.